I would like, am I on?
Yep.
I would like to thank...
Oops.
I would also like to thank Elizabeth and Douglas, as Douglas did, for their provocative thoughts. I appreciate them, and I also like to thank you for your affirmation, also for your oppositions, and also for your need for clarification. And before I begin tonight, I'm going to say three things just to the general audience, because a couple of people said there may have been some misunderstanding. One thing, I made the statement that I send all of my clients back to their family of origin. Not all take that opportunity, but I must add to that that I coach or train them before they go to the home. It would be highly inappropriate for you to suggest that someone go back to family of origin without having developed some kind of relationship with that person and also instructing them in some way in how a system works, and then coaching them in how to self-define in a responsible and mature way. Secondly, someone thought that I was suggesting that therapy is either justification or sanctification. For me, therapy falls under the first article. For me, therapy is a gift of God for healing for His creation. I do not regard it as justification or sanctification. Now, what I'd like to do is read to you a little story that talks about reactivity. I wanted to read this last night and forgot it, and then I will get into tonight's presentation. This is called The Lesson. Then Jesus took His disciples up the mountain, and gathering them around Him, He taught them. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are they that mourn. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are they that thirst for justice. Blessed are you when persecuted. Blessed are you when you suffer. Be glad and rejoice, for your reward is great in heaven. Then Simon Peter said, "Are we supposed to know this?" And Andrew said, "Do we have to write this down?" And James said, "Will we have a test on this?" And Philip said, "I don't have any paper." And Bartholomew said, "Do we have to turn this in?" And John said, "The other disciples didn't have to learn this." And Matthew said, "May I go to the boys' room?" And Judas said, "What does this have to do with real life?" Then one of the Pharisees who was present asked to see Jesus' lesson plan and inquired of Jesus, "Where is your anticipatory set and your objectives in the cognitive domain?" And Jesus wept. A little bit about reactivity. The other night at the fireside chat, I brought with me some copies of my newsletter, New Creation. This comes, I shouldn't say this comes out 4 years. It used to be a quarterly, now it's a randomly. But if you subscribe for 4 issues, you will get it in due time. 4 issues are $6.50 a year, and I have 2 copies left, and to keep the integrity of the subscription service, I have to charge $1 for each of those. So if you're interested, you may leave $1 there and take a copy. I'm now talking to my advisory council about the possibility of polling all of the bishops in the ELCA and the district presidents in the LCMS to sell the copyright of each issue to the synod or the district, and they could reproduce it Xerox, and it would cut down the cost. And if we can find about 20 or 25% of the synods and districts who are willing to do that, we will do that. We will continue to print it for those who are outside the Lutheran Church and subscribe. We have about 3,000 subscribers now. If you have any other questions about that, I'd be glad to share that with you.
Do you have any back issues?
There are some back issues, so you'd have to write to my office and ask for those. Tonight, I would like to talk about a fifth crisis that Douglas didn't talk about this morning, and that's the crisis of leadership. I talked to an etymologist to find out where the word leadership came from, and he traced it back to an old English word, laden, which he said meant, and I think this is very important to listen to this, a leader is someone who is either in front of or alongside of others in helping or guiding or enabling them to go ahead. So the position could be either ahead or alongside of. There have been, in the last couple decades, three major theories concerning leadership, and they're called X, Y, and Z. I don't want to spend a lot of time describing them. Basically, theory X is a very masculine form of leadership, which is top down. And it's the pyramid this way. The greatest example of that would be the military. That's theory X. Theory Y is the inverted pyramid, where the people whose lives are most affected are asked to make decisions or to fill in information before decisions are made. Theory Z comes out of Japan, and theory Z emphasizes more connectedness. Individuals still can act on their own, but they must act in the light of being a part of the community. Last January, I did a retreat for an Episcopal church, a very small Episcopal church. It's 120 years old. And they have about 60 members in a very small Texas town. So they have very few new members that come in. Theory Z would work in this congregation because it's very sociocentric, as is Japanese society, where it came from. In fact, in this congregation, they put the names of all the members in the congregation in a hat. And each year they pull out 12 names, and those 12 names form the vestry. That could only be possible in a group that had some connectedness and association with each other over a period of time. Now, there is also a new theory called the horizontal theory of leadership, and this comes out of the feminist movement. What I'd like to do is just for briefly describe to you the contrast between theory X and what I'm calling theory H, or what the feminists call the horizontal theory of leadership. Maybe I'll just read this rather than listing in the board. Theory X I will read first, and then I will do theory H. Theory X is based upon competition. You have the chief executive officer. It's interesting that business uses a military term. It's competition. Theory H is based on collaboration. Secondly, theory X gives attention to task. Theory H gives attention to process. Theory X is based on gamemanship. You try to outfox, outmaneuver your opponent. Theory H is based on authenticity, telling the truth. Theory X, you shut out your feelings because feelings can get in the way of business. Theory H says you appropriately express your feelings. Theory X, you view people in terms of job description rather than viewing people, as Theory H does, as whole people. Incidentally, I was recently asked to be a consultant to a proposal of the Lutheran Women's Missionary League, who had set aside $100,000 to help clergy and members of clergy's families to heal and to recover. But then the grant read this way, so that they might be good models for the church. And I reacted vociferously. I said, if clergy are only valuable when they are performing task-oriented items, etc., you must reinvestigate that. You want these people to get well for their own sake. If they serve as good models for the church, that's a byproduct. But whenever you ask someone to function for the sake of other people constantly, you're asking them to dysfunction. Theory X. There is a resisting or fearing of differences. Theory H, there is the accepting and the utilizing of differences. Theory X, exercising power by trusting only a few people. Whereas in Theory H, you share power by extending trust to more people. If you're interested in the horizontal theory, there's a book called Paths to Power by Natasha Josefovitz. Good book. Now, however, I'm going to talk about leadership in a totally different way. And this comes out of family systems thinking. The basis of this theory is that there is not that much difference between the biological and the existential. The belief is that all organisms function in the same manner. And therefore, if we look at how cells operate and function with one another, we can understand also how we function one another as one another as individuals. Let me start with a cancer cell. A cancer cell cannot replicate itself. It must be a parasite on another cell to replicate itself. Secondly, a cancer cell cannot say no to itself. It is non-self-regulating. A cancer cell is very immature. In fact, the best way to describe a cancer cell is it's egocentric. What happens is a cancer cell attaches itself to a living cell. And it draws out the DNA from the living cell. And in doing that, it replicates itself. And we have metastasis that develops. But what happens is the cancer cell commits biological suicide because by drawing out the DNA from the living cell and replicating itself, it kills its source of life. It's an ecological system, but in reverse in terms of destruction. Now, the way we have treated cancer is through surgery to excise the cancerous cell. Then we also have dealt with cancer cells through chemotherapy, which is to retard the replication. But specialists have been saying, is there not another way that cancer could be treated? And the response was, how do we strengthen the host cell so that it is not susceptible to the egocentricity of the cancer cell? Which then led into a study and look at immunology. And so now I'm going to describe a little bit about immunology, but stay with me because I'm going to apply this to leadership. The purpose of the immune system is to keep things separate. Immunity involves self-marking. If there were no immunity, there would be no life. Everything would glob or fuse together. The immune system, just like any other part of the body, must develop. It is immature in the beginning of life. That's why if a three-year-old were to imbibe a certain amount of alcohol, the three-year-old would not be able to get rid of the toxic substance, and the alcohol would become lethal because the immune system is immature. The immune system must develop its maturity. And the way the immune system develops its maturity is only under attack or with challenge. An inoculation is what? It is to put the virus into the body so that the body can develop its own antibodies to reject the foreign objects. When there are organ transplants, the immune system must be retarded because the immune system will fight against this foreign object and reject the foreign organ. So it is part of the immune system's responsibility to preserve life, to help life continue. Now, immature cells tend to fuse and glob. You get two cells that are immature, they glob or fuse. As cells mature, they specialize and differentiate. Keep that in mind. Now, I want to talk about this in terms of leadership. Leadership is the immune system in any system. Leadership in a system's way of thinking affects the whole field. There is nothing in a system that brings more calm and focus than effective leadership, because leaders serve as the immune system. So let's say you have a pathogen out here. This is a person who's into reptilian behavior. Okay. This individual can suck out the DNA of a pastoral staff of a congregation. And that pathogen can replicate itself. And remember, it is non-self-regulating. It cannot say no to itself. I mean, you just can't say to a reptile, let's sit down and be reasonable about this. It will not happen. Okay? There is little capacity to do self-regulation. The immune system, therefore, in a congregation must be the leadership. The leadership must have the capacity and the courage to say, these are our boundaries. This behavior is acceptable, this behavior is not acceptable, etc. Because what the immune system does is deal with the hostility in the environment. And there are two types of hostility we always have to deal with. One is direct hostility. And regardless of how mature the immune system is, it will have no capacity to deal with the direct hostility. Put your hand in a pot of hot boiling water and pull it out, and your immune system simply cannot deal with all of that direct hostility. There's no way to defend the system against it. Ingest a large amount of toxic substances, direct hostility. It would just overwhelm the whole bodily system. But most of the things we experience physiologically and existentially are the indirect hostilities. And in the indirect hostility, the key will be the reaction of the immune system to the foreign agent. But what happens? Occasionally, the immune system overreacts to the foreign agent. And they believe the propaganda of the foreign agent that we are big and massive. Sort of like the folks who went over to Canaan for the first time and giants over there, see, overreaction. And now the problem is not so much the virus as it is the immune system's overreaction to the foreign agent. And disease becomes the inflammation that has overreacted to the foreign element. Or the allergy, which is your immune system overreacting to the pollen and substances that you breathe in. And now the disease is your overreactivity to the propaganda. So we are all at the mercies of our own pentagons. We have all mined ourselves. And there are times when our immune system overreacts to some of the viruses or pathogens, the hostility outside of us. And when we do that, that becomes more of the disease or the illness than actually the virus or the pathogen itself. So if leadership overreacts to the hostility in the environment, that whole system will become reactive. Now comes a bombshell. Every system needs a hierarchy. There is no living organism that has matured or specialized or differentiated that doesn't have a head. Any organism that does not have a head fuses and meshes. Now, that does not mean that hierarchy has to be bad hierarchy. But no organism can function without a head. And the purpose of the head is to do what? To give a direction. To move. Not to dominate. And I must add this. Not all power is from top down. Not all power that comes from top down distorts or is distorted. Power also can move out horizontally. And it too can distort and be distorted. Peer pressure, crowd mania. They can be destructive. There's a dark side also to community as there is to hyper-individuality. Therefore, it is so important that in the community, whatever the hierarchy might be, that it function well. And it knows that its purpose is for the survival of the organism and also for the integrity of the organism. Because the immune system provides integrity. This is of the body, this is not of the body. And if the body does not have its integrity, it becomes diseased. Now, the thing that the leader must most provide for the community as the head, as the director, and when I talk about leadership in a congregation, I'm talking about the pastoral staff, the elected officials, and members of influence. What must be provided is a vision. When I go into congregations that are in trouble, there are three things that I often find. A lack of boundaries, a poor immune system. No vision. And high emotionality. And I say to the folks, differences do not cause differing. It is the emotionality that is attached to the differences that creates the differing. We all sit here right now, and we differ. As long as the emotionality is reduced, it'll be fine. Introduce some emotionality, and we can begin to feel the hostility, the drawing apart. What I do with congregations that I go into that are in conflict, I've been in 42 in 4 years. Plus one seminary and three schools. I could make a better living than what I'm doing now if I just did that on my own. What I do is to try to help them to see that if they do not have a purpose, the system will disintegrate. And the head of the purpose has to come from the leadership. One of the things that family systems thinking cannot provide, since it deals with the emotional bonding, it cannot deal with purpose bonding. That's where theology has to come and inform systems thinking. Because one of the task of all of us is to transcend ourselves, to go beyond who we are, and to see the greater good. But unless the leadership provides a vision, the community will flounder. I want to give you an example. I was called into a little church. I won't name the town, but it's a little German town in Texas. And they had just had a Cold War that erupted into sort of a Gulf crisis. And this went on for about 16 months, and the pastor resigned. They asked me to come in to work with them. I mentioned to them that this system really doesn't have a good immune system. They're very poor boundaries here, little self-marking. And this little German community, part of the ethos was the pastor was to be a part of the family life of everyone. And they expected the pastor to come to every birthday, every anniversary, every arrival of the first tooth. Well, this new pastor would be paid 25 cents a mile for all business miles. And this new pastor, when he went to the anniversaries and the birthdays and the first tooth celebrations, he marked down the mileage to receive reimbursement for the 25 cents. One of the men said to me, "Do you know that we fed that man and he charged us?" Boundaries. Then I said, you need to sit down and do some thinking about who you are and how all the parts fit together. And one lady said, well, if we get a pastor here that we have to tell who he is and how he does to do it, that's not the pastor we want. I remain non-anxious. But I knew I needed to get back to that. So later on I said, if I were to get the call to this congregation, what would be the major problem facing me? The president of the congregation immediately said, the great variety of expectations. And then I said, I would have difficulty accepting the call to this congregation, because if that is true, you would have me programmed for failure. And I would not want to fail, and I'm not sure that you would want me to fail. So how could you deal with that? So you see, I didn't have to get reactive to her. I allowed things to process and get them to talk about boundaries. And then I began to talk to them about vision. What is the overarching purpose of this gathering and group? One of the first things I do with couples that come in for marital counseling is, what is your goal for your relationship? What is your vision? And then as we go through the therapy, I can always push them back, hey, does that really hit your vision? Does that really hit your goal? Is that really where you want to go? But unless you have some kind of standard, some kind of dream, some kind of hope, some kind of destination, you can flounder. Now, one of the mistakes that clergy make when they go into congregations is to believe that they are responsible for the life of the congregation. You are not responsible for the life of the congregation. You are responsible for your position in that congregation and for your defining what that position will be. If you are to be responsible for the whole congregation, that means you must function for everybody else. And you will have immense stress and you will have immense anxiety. People always function best when they are functioning for themselves. I look at call documents. Oh, we want a pastor who will motivate us. We want a pastor who is enthusiastic. And I think to myself, God, what dependency. I mean, the plumber doesn't come to my house and say, I'd like you to motivate me to work on my pipes.
I don't say to the dentist, well, I hope you're enthusiastic before you start drilling. People are asking clergy to function for them, to do for them what they must do for themselves. That's dependency. And we play into it. Well, we have to learn it is appropriate to define who we will be and to define that position. Now, I'm not saying autocratically or totally independent of that community, but I will define who I will be and who I will be in this position in accord to who you are as a congregation. But too often what happens in a congregation is most pastors are not leaders. They are followers. They find out what everybody else wants and then they do it. That's not leading. That's following. It's not only George Bush who has a problem with this vision thing. It's most of us. What is the vision, the purpose, the goal, the transcendent of ourself that we want to achieve or at least direct our efforts toward? And that vision must be given by the leader. Without the vision, the leader perishes, as well as the people. It tells you, and you help others know where you're going. Now, sometimes you're going to have to recognize that your vision or your agenda may not be their agenda. Then it is impinging upon you to communicate and articulate that vision and to seek the support of others in joining that vision. I am not talking about, I have this great big ideal and now I'm going to plunk it down on you. You are pulling it out of the community, and you are working with the community, and you are then the one to articulate the vision for others. Someone in community must baptize hope. And that role falls to the leader, to the one who either stands ahead or alongside of to enable people to move towards a destiny. Okay, before I give my little final devotion, I will take questions and answers at this point. They want to rest. Well, first of all, you have to self-consciously go into the group to say, I want to get to know you, who you are, what the needs are. And I want to get some feedback in here. Where do you need to go? And not always where do you want to go. But what is the area that we need to go into? And it's a process. It's partly training, taking time to articulate that vision, get people to become a part of it, and share it with you. Now, some people don't want to be led. Some people simply want to remain in comfort, or what we call in a system's homeostatic balance. But if you lead, you will get reaction. So if you're not getting reaction, you may not be leading. Because the minute you begin to lead and stick your head out, get folks going,
the dependent people will get reactive because they have the greatest stake in relationships and keeping the relationships the way it used to be. And what we say in systems is people are loyal to their suffering. To put it in Lutheran language, people sit in their own shit. And it's hard to move and change. But if you're getting a reaction, you're doing some leading. But too often, we are put such a premium on concord and harmony. And when you do that, you play in the hands of the most dependent people. If you want to produce change in the church, in your home, in society, you work with the most motivated people. You don't spend all your time working with the naysayers and the door slammers, nor the delinquent members. If I were to go back to the parish, maybe they wouldn't leave me stay there too long, but I would go back to the delinquents and say, look, I know you've been delinquent. You know, I expect you to be responsible. If you need me sometimes, here's my phone number, but don't expect me to chase you. I wouldn't exactly say it that kind of way, but let that message out there. To challenge people to be responsible. That's what the whole immunology thing's about. You simply do not build up immunology if you do not challenge the body. Life is challenge. That's when you get the growth. I don't think human beings can live without addictions. And, you know, you choose your drug, as we say. And you're going to have systems that also get addicted to forms, to get addicted to false theologies, to get addicted to the old way of doing things. Okay. All I can say to you is when you want to institute change, you will get reactivity. But you've got to define yourself, stay in touch with others, and stay the course. The problem with most of us clergy is we want everybody to like us. I mean, some people win elections by 50.11% today, but we need 99.99 people to love us. And we're afraid that we're going to get fired or we're not going to get paid or something. All I can say is there will be immature people, there will be dependent people. I'm not trying to put them down. I'm saying that's how they function. That's where they are. You simply have to have enough maturity to believe that this purpose is important and I want to be a part of it and I want the community to move with me and I know this is what will be the community, will bring community health, etc. Yes?
Can you name circumstances regarding intervention in the social system where one intentionally does not work with the leadership but works with people on the base of the organization?
You're asking me what interventions can be made in the larger system?
That would justify one intentionally not engaging the leadership of a structure, a system, but in choosing to work with the base of the system, the boy for boy, the common members, and avoiding addressing the leadership at all.
Well, if the leadership is distorted and it's stuck in its own homeostasis, which, you know, where we are in the church today. You know, you got to get around it. You got to move around it.
That would be a circumstance.
Yeah. Well, I think what we're seeing in Eastern Europe is just, you know, that homeostatic balance of communism simply no longer could hold. The forces were ready to change. It wasn't working. And where did it come from?
So one works with the leadership if they are amenable, otherwise one goes to the base of the or somewhere else in the organization and works with people and make themselves available to you.
Yeah, well, just remember, if you try to work around the leadership, they can always try to hurt you. And they can also sabotage your efforts.
Which explains pretty much the
intervention into
the social system of Israel.
Yeah, well, he was going to get it through the folks who had most invested in this system, who were coasting in the homeostatic balance. You know, a couple of women clergy talked to me today about the fear that the church might cut the limb off of them even after 20 years. And I said, you have to remember that for the church to now invite you to be part of the ordained ministry was a dramatic change. And anytime there is change or loss in a system, there will be an emotional shock wave. But the emotional shock wave often goes underground and may not appear for 5, 10, 15, 20 years later. What was it in Eastern Europe? Quite a long time. And that there will be reactivity. And if you get reactive to the reactivity, you're going to enable that reactivity. You need to define yourself to that reactivity. All pathogens are enabled. All illnesses are enabled. In other words, the host cell becomes weakened and allows the pathogen to suck out the DNA.
When, say you set it in motion, okay? You've got a vision and you set it in motion and the pathogens are attacking you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you have a group of 10 families or something who are highly reactive and against the vision and are sabotaging it. Okay, well, one thing that says that the system's probably working pretty good or something's happening. It's got people's attention. Okay, you cannot force these people to change how they function. You can only look at how you are functioning. And you need to define who you will be to them and stay in touch. If they don't want to stay in touch, they'll leave. I mean, they'll take their money around. I mean, a lot of folks, they use their offering, their membership, their attendance as a carrot for getting their way. But see, the more you give in to the dependency, the more they have the power and the strength. And if they choose to leave, they choose to leave. If they cannot self-regulate themselves and they become real cancer cells, egocentric, not can't say no to themselves, then somewhere the leadership has to set boundaries. We cannot tolerate this behavior. I had an ELCA pastor come to me one day and he said, I just found out there have been some secret meetings going on and that there's a petition with 65 names to remove me from office. And he says, I'm here to get some coaching. I said, fine. The first thing you'll need to do is expose it. Secrecy is an anxious response to anxiety. It's deception. It's present in all dysfunctional systems. You've got to talk about it. 2 weeks later, after the service, he said, 2 weeks ago, if I had said what I'm saying today, I would have been angry. I would have said things I would have regretted. I would have simply been too reactive. He picked up the language real well. He says, I want you to know that I know the petition is going on and there have been secret meetings. I don't know who's all involved. But this is not the way we do it in the church. We have means to deal with this. I want you to come and talk to me personally. And I will give the matter to the church council to handle. Right after the service, the vice president said, well, Pastor, I think you're making a mountain out of a molehill. Well, he found out who one of them was. But in doing that, it took the power away from some of those people. Because part of the power they have is in the secrecy. You don't know what's going on.
You don't know what they're doing. So one of the first things in that respect is name the demon. What is happening? Not accusing, not blaming. But if they get to the point where they're so highly reactive and they cannot regulate themselves and they're about to replicate themselves, then you have to, yes, which happens? Then you have, the leadership must intervene and set boundaries. And that takes some maturity.
Just to add a little bit to that, what if at least part of the leadership is part of that cancer? So you come down to it and you find out that the leadership is part of the team. If you don't have the leadership to say, well, we'll take it to the council.
Then you need to go one-on-one to those leadership people and tell them what you expect from them and define yourself to them.
And also name what you think is happening. Now, that does not say they're going to stop sabotaging. Like I said yesterday, you can perfectly self-define yourself, but you cannot keep people from fusing with you. You cannot keep people from emotionally distancing from you. But all what I'm really saying then to you, if you don't have some mature leadership, duck. I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's just like a family. If you don't have maturity in that family, what's going to happen? You're going to have a lot of abuse. You're going to have rejection. You're going to have neglect. And strengthening the whole cell, the immune system, the leadership is so important. If I were to go back to the parish, I would work a lot on training leaders and working with leaders and choosing the most motivated and mature people, or helping that this the community to do that and to see that.
Could you apply this paradigm to our old culture, not the church, but the culture of North America?
Well, I think we have leaders today who are followers. And I think we have leaders today who play on people's reactivity. I mean, Willie Horton didn't appeal to the cerebral cortex. It appealed to the reptilian, and the messy harbor in Boston didn't appeal to the cerebral cortex, it appealed to the reptilian. See? So what we have today is, you know, the lowest denominator of working with folks. We're infantilizing people, or we're playing on people's immaturities and fears. We are not having leaders who are giving visions, giving directions. Ed Friedman has a United States senator and his wife as a client. I will not name the person. The senator has been mentioned as a possible candidate for the presidency of the United States. Ed told me, he said, when he cannot come to therapy and he's just seeing the senator's wife, after she leaves, the senator calls from the Senate floor to find out what she said. He said, the man has the capacity to galvanize support around himself. He's confident, self-charming. Very much like a narcissist. But he said, emotionally, he's like a child. But you see, what goes on in our society today is that we're not looking at substance. We're looking at images. We're appealing to the reptilian side. And that's a danger to society. Apathy and power. Talk about what? I need more clarity.
The power of apathy over the dynamic.
Well, the apathy is part of the homeostasis. We like being apathetic. And we've always been apathetic, so we remain apathetic. You see? Homeostasis means to be in the same position or the same functioning position. And it's strong. And all groups or organisms need it, right? I mean, you need a little homeostasis. You need some stability and coherence. And some congregations that like to maintain the homeostasis of their apathy. So if you want to come in and poke it, don't expect wine, roses, chocolate, sour raisins, or anything else. You need to realize that I'm here to challenge that apathy and that that system may react and become reactive to me. And they may not want to change. That's why I said yesterday, change is predicated upon anxiety. So what you really need to do in a congregation that's apathetic is create a lot of anxiety. I mean, I had a client one day, and he had no anxiety. So I tried to provoke some. I couldn't provoke some. I said, well, I'm bored. I said, you must be bored too. What are we doing here? There's got to be some juice somewhere, you see, to get into the system. And systems can get depressed and stay homeostatic with their depression. Systems can get apathetic and get homeostatic with their apathy. You know, people can dysfunction, but it's familiar, and maintain that balance. I got time for two more questions, right? Well, okay.
Thank you. Could you say more about how theology needs to inform family systems?
Yeah, it's a book coming out. We had this plan. I'm writing a book called How Your Church Family Works for the Albany Institute, and it will be out in June. And it will have a chapter in theology informing systems thinking. Okay. Thanks, you. Okay, next. We are to lose our life in order to find it, not to lose it. This does not say that I lose my life and I lose every concept of who I am as a self or value or person. I believe part of the Imago Dei is I am to be a steward of myself. And I listen to Luther. I believe that God has created me. And I am a gift. It's just not my time, talent, treasures, that's my stewardship. He has given me eyes, nose, ears, reason, and all my faculties and senses. So I am to manage all of this. I am not to de-self myself in order to please you or to comply with you or whatever. But I am to transcend myself, and I do that in my compassion and my care.
It certainly seems to me that one of the choices, I may choose not to be the leader of the congregation, but to be the chaplain to the leader, and let them do what they want in the congregation. And there have been times when I've done that.
Okay, you're raising a question.
Assuming that the pastor is going to be the leader.
Can the pastor be the chaplain to the leaders and not the leader, him or herself?
Seems to happen.
My own feeling would be, I'd think in most congregations that wouldn't take place. They would still expect from the pastor some pastoral leadership. Some direction. So, and I think part of your responsibility would be to give them some theological direction. I'm not saying you have to lead them on, you know, how we should build a building and how many bricks in it and what kind of bricks and that type of thing. That's their leadership. But somehow or other, that theology, you are the theologian in residence, and you must in somehow or other inform that leadership. And you could play a teaching role. But I would still think you'd be informing that vision and influencing in some way. Okay. My time is almost up, and I just want to read a quote And this comes from Rainer Maria Rilke. I was going to read a quote. Oh, here it is. This is in Letters to a Young Poet. Most people have turned their solutions toward what is easy and toward the easiest side of the easy. But it is clear that we must trust in what is difficult. Everything alive, trust in it. Everything in nature grows and defends itself any way it can and is spontaneously itself, tries to be itself at all costs and against all opposition. We know little, but that we must trust in what is difficulty is a certainty that will never abandon us. That something is difficult must be one more reason for us to do it. Trust in what is difficult. And all you have is a promise. Thank you.
Thank you for the invitation.